From KQED.
My name is Minister Marvin K. White, and on behalf of Ben and B. Emawoke, I welcome you all to the celebration of life of Garvey Woke Emawoke. It is a source of great comfort to the parents of Woke that you decided to stay and keep Woke on your mind as we recall his cut too short life. Woke was born in 1942 in Chicago and attended La Montessori, a prestigious all-black Montessori school. Woke loved activism, collecting vinyl, reading Angela Davis, and quoting Michelle Alexander. Woke was a viral sensation but never learned to monetize his wokeness, but he loved him some Erykah Badu. True story. I remember Woke telling me over kombucha, "I'm so woke that I once convinced the manager at Office Depot that manila folders and colored paper are racist descriptions and that instead he should use folders of color and paper of color." Next, he asked why number two pencils had to be black lead. "I think the best my conscious black ass could do was choose brown sugar over white sugar for my oatmeal. For me, it was all about the low-hanging fruit coast and staying kinda like woke." Scripture says, you see, Adam had ribs. You see, then God gave Adam the itis. Then Eve, from out of nowhere, took one of Adam's ribs off his plate. And then Eve helped herself to the apples that God set aside for God's pie. And then Eve asked God for salt for the first time. You see, Eve had a recipe come to mind. Mind been coming to men for a while, but Eve come to mind. Got right up in mind's face. Yes, Eve had a taste for something different. No shame in her game, and that's why God uninvited her forever from God's barbecues. Cause Eve was woke as fuck before Adam. This Eve and this woke had much in common. They were both taken out of context at birth. Eve wanted to lay down and woke wanted to get up, and now they both have. But here's the thing that woke knew. When you wake up from the dream and your fist is still clenched and raised above your head is when you know that you fight in the spirit of white supremacy and state violence on a whole nother level. Woke knew that the prayers be like protest in malls of America because the spirit of empire show up quick to make sure you have a nightmare. Being woke means staying awake even in your dreams and knowing that white supremacy is a witch that rides your sleeping body to do her bidding. Let us pray. Lord, help us to root out the spirit of restlessness in black people's sleep. Help us name everybody and everything, ancestral and contemporary, family or foe, who doing dirt on that astral plane. Record and share their demon's name, Lord, so that we might fight back. Amen. Woke, thank you for all that you came into this world to do and all that you gave us. And as we say to you now, now fleek, now bay, now yes, and hot, on sleigh, on laid, on no tea and no shade, to the top of the porch, to the windows, to the walls. Now sashay away, Stacy Dash away. Dash of salt away all.
Amen. For me, this concept of woke died the moment people began to think of woke as a destination. Woke has pretty much been synonymous with that thing some well-meaning white people do. There's a type, those who have read some books or done some activism, and now they think they've got it all figured out. They believe they have the best intentions, but in the end, their actions do more harm than good. I'm Tanya Mosley, and on this episode of Truth Be Told, how do you deal with well-meaning white folks who just don't get it?
Dear Truth Be Told,
I need your help.
There is so much conversation about racism and sort of discrimination in America that gets wiped away because the premise on which it's centered is like, well, it's not happening out of animus, right?
Meet Gene Denby. We brought him in as our wise one. He's the co-host of the NPR podcast, Code Switch.
And it's like, okay, that'll make it no less racist. And so I think there's something about the whole notion of being well-intentioned that is like sort of a way to derail real, like, messy conversations about race because intentions don't matter, effects do.
Gene is a really good listener. We hung out at a conference once and he let me talk his ear off. So, in this episode of Truth Be Told, Gene is going to help me answer two questions on the topic of well-meaning white folks at home and at work. Our first question comes from a woman we're calling Woke at Home.
Dear Truth Be Told, I'm an Afro-Brazilian woman writing to you from New England. My white boyfriend's family is super politically engaged. They fight for equal rights and, living in Georgia, are almost obsessed with fighting racism. I sure appreciate them as allies, but they keep talking about people of color as they, always third person, as if they don't realize I am sitting right there. That they are describing my people and my experiences with little regard for my psychological safety, or even considering that the trauma runs much deeper when it's personal. I haven't been able to talk to anyone, though, about this. I guess I fear it will end up being a value judgment. What should I do? How should I approach this?
Gene, help.
Whew, that sounds like a lot.
I know.
So there, it seems like a few different things here, right? Like, it sounds like, is it safe to say that this family is an all-white family, right? Like,
yes, they're all-white family.
Okay. Tanner Colby wrote a book a couple years ago called Some of My Best Friends Are Black. And he was like, I live in Brooklyn at the time. I voted for Obama. And everyone was really proud of themselves that they voted for Obama in 2008. And he's looking around, he's like, yo, do any of us actually know any black folks? Like, do we know any black people in real life? He was from Alabama, like from outside of Birmingham.
Yeah.
He was like, I don't know any actual black folks that I'm cool with. I mean, Chris Rock had this joke about, like, he's like, when I say friend, I mean somebody who you have over for dinner. You know what I mean?
Right,
he's
like, absolutely.
Have they been in your house?
All my black friends have a bunch of white friends. And all my white friends have one black friend.
We always joke about this idea called race inflation. Like, that person ain't really a friend.
Right.
That person is like, a person, like, you talk at work sometimes, and that person is conveniently inflated into friends.
That's your neighbor you know down the street. Yes, say
exactly.
Hi when you're, like, cutting grass.
Exactly. Right. I mean, we talk a lot on Code Switch about, like, social spaces, right, and the way the social spaces are made up. And there was a study a couple years ago by this dude who I'm a big fan of named Robbie Jones. He works at the Public Religion Research Institute. And they do these big public opinion surveys. And they just sort of ask people questions about the way they live their lives, right? And they ask this very sort of straight ahead question. Like, they ask people to sort of list their closest friends, right? What they found was that, like, 75% of white people have no non-white friends in their close social circles, right? And his point was sort of at the time was that one of the reasons that Ferguson seemed like really visceral for so many people of color and black people in particular, and why it seemed like why there were so many white people like, wait, what is everyone talking? Why is everyone so upset? Was like because we're talking about two completely different sets of experiences. And that's true even of well-meaning white people.
You know, at the heart of Woke at Home's question is that she's not feeling seen.
They're so passionate about black people's rights and lives, and I never see a person of color in their house. Like, that really bothers me. Like, you don't have black friends. You know what I mean? I just don't understand how it's almost like water and oil. Like, there were instances when I am in his hometown where I'm the only person of color in a room of, you know, 50 people. And yeah, they're talking about black people and their rights and what to do to change. And it's just, it feels so empty.
Like, in the day-to-day, she sees that they don't really interact with black people, except for her. But
right,
yet, they're
right.
Talking about it as if she's not in the room. I mean how would you say she deals with that?
She might need to, like, just ask her boyfriend to step up, like, yo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it might be too hard for her to make that, like, look, like, this is making me uncomfortable, and I would like you to sort of curb this. Like, she needs to get him on her side.
Yeah, it can't all be on her. She has to,
yeah,
he's the
right.
one who has introduced her to the environment. So he
Absolutely.
Has to have some sort of place in it.
My fiance is a woman of color, but she's not black. So we talk about race all the time. So a bunch of our friends and I were kicking it. And we were playing spades, and they were recalling a party in which there was a black woman with a white partner. In which that white partner, that white husband of this black woman, was showing his entire ass. Like, he was just asking all these very stupid questions. He was also, like, saying all this wild stuff. Like, when,
like,
and
what?
There was a game they were going to play. They were going to play this game. It was sort of a taboo style game in which everyone was like, we're not going to play this because it required people to do accents. And all the people in the room were brown. They were all different kinds of brown, but they're all in the room. Like, nope, we're not going to play that game because once we start doing accents, somebody's going to do something really racist.
Right,
so we're not going
right.
to do it. And he was like, why? Why are you guys being so sensitive? Like, and I was like, and so then we were all like retro, like, you know, after the fact, like, what? Like, well, I understand how she married this dude.
Like, who?
And it got to a point where she felt comfortable enough bringing him to a brown party with a bunch of black and Latinx people kicking it. And he was showing his entire ass, which means they never talked about
it.
Stuff,
they've never
right?
talked about it. Yeah.
And it's like, you are leaving aside sort of like the actual issue of, like, you know, what your husband's out here saying ignorant stuff. Wouldn't you just feel like don't want to protect yourself from being embarrassed? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
you don't even know what happened when they went home that night. Hopefully, something happened. Hopefully.
But they didn't get to the point where they got married when that was the first, you know what I'm saying?
You're right.
Like, if that was the first time when they went home that night that she said something to him, it's already too late,
sis.
It's
so late.
You know, it's too late.
So if you could sum up your advice for woke at home, what would be your advice for her?
First of all, you're not tripping, number one. But two, you got to get Bay to, like, you know, pull his weight a little bit. Like, he has to say something. It's hard in a family when you're the person who's not in the family, when you're, like, marrying into the family or dating someone in the family, to be the person who's asking for people to change their behavior. Like, your person has to advocate on your behalf to their family. Like, that just is the way it is. Whether that's, like, telling them to not smoke around you, or to, you know what I mean? Or telling them to, like, not be woke around you.
Yeah.
Like, you got to figure out a way that he has to step up there. So that's what I would say. Like you're not bugging, and also you got to nudge him, or maybe, like, be very, very forthright with him that he has to, like, if there's going to be any conversation between you and the family, he has to do the prep work for that. He has to get them ready for that idea.
How does woke at home talk to her boyfriend? How would you suggest she talks to her boyfriend about this?
Listen, okay, so this is the thing that I feel very strongly about. If you're in a racial relationship, you should be talking about race all the time,
right?
Period. Like, it's not like, I don't understand, like, how does she talk? Like, look, you just talk about it. Like, you just, it is not some neutral fact of your relationship, you know what I mean? It's
right.
like a thing that you, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
you have to talk about it. It is not, I don't understand how people are like, how do I talk to my non-brown partner? Listen, like, if you have
you are a brown partner, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is your life, right? They're going to be implicated in a bunch of stuff, right? You know what I mean? Like, their whiteness is going to be implicated in your life in all these ways, right? And your brownness is going to be implicated in their lives in all these ways, right? And if you have kids together, that's going to be, there's a whole bunch of very real conversations you need to have, right? And if this cat is from as a progressive family, as she says that his family is, then he might have some of the, like, language to start to have these conversations. But, like, they need to be talking about this stuff all the time, because it's not nothing, right? It's like, I mean, people have all sorts of conversations about where they want to live, and, you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
like, where they want to send their kids to school. Those are conversations about race. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I also would say, like, it's the perfect time for her. If they haven't been talking about it, it's not too late. They're not married.
Yeah, it's not.
They're
not,
like,
married.
You know, this can be the time. And even if they are married, like, you know, you'll find out, Gene, the whole point of marriage is, like, it's just it's like working through
yep.
things your entire marriage. So
mm-hmm.
it's nothing that's like a deal breaker over, although it's a big deal. But you'll spend the time.
Deal.
Yeah. Spend the time to try to work on it.
I would think that if you really care about a lot of these things, right, that, like, you and your partner have to be on the same page about some basic stuff, right? Whiteness is a very specific force in American life,
mm-hmm.
has very specific consequences for people. We need to talk about that, right? Like, we need to have a conversation about who I am in relation to you, in relation to your family, right? Like, and where you are in relation to, like, a lot of these questions about race and about anti-blackness in America, because it's not, you know, like, to your point about some of my friends are black. Like, I'm not trying to be your partner and the black friend you reference
right.
when you do something racist. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, there's also that other place where most of us spend 8 to 10 hours a day. What do you do about well-meaning white folks at work? How to survive woke at work after this message. Our next question comes from Woke at Work, a woman of color who works in a majority white office.
As a black woman, it's an onion, of challenges that could be anything from how do I ask if I can be invited to a meeting that I should have been invited to but was not. Or it could be anything that is like, how do I get my voice in on something that I own, that I'm leading, that pretty much kind of blocks me out from the get-go.
Woke at Work is talking about passive-aggressive behavior. And you know, that can sometimes feel like gaslighting. It makes you ask yourself, do I belong here? And in a white majority space, that's always about race.
I realized I wasn't being myself when I found myself silencing myself in meetings, in spaces where I thought that I could provide valuable insight. And I had to really sit back in that when I first felt myself kind of subconsciously disciplining myself and censoring myself. It took me a minute to kind of digest that of like, why did you do that to yourself? Dear Truth Be Told, how do I retain my truth, my boldness, my unapologeticness while working in a passive aggressive white majority space?
All right, Gene.
I was going to ask you to go first. I was very curious. I mean, you are a black woman.
Yeah.
You work in public radio. So
yeah, yeah.
You're working in majority white spaces, and public radio is famous for being, nice.
I would take stock in thinking about, like, my understanding of the dynamics of the room, of my teams, mm-hmm. of the people that I'm working with. And I hate to say it, but that, like, people care about you when you care about them. You have to like do all of this extra emotional work with all the people mm-hmm. that you're working with and thinking about the dynamics and their place in the company, their place yep. on the team, and then strategically work through that to make sure that you are being seen, that you're being heard, and you're being seen and heard by the right people so mm-hmm. that your ideas can be amplified. And also kind of like being intentional with that, like building allyship with people you might see on your team that you're like, okay, I know that they're acting this way because they're vying for someone's eye or they want a particular space on a particular project. And so thinking about ways that you can be allies where they're amplifying you and you're amplifying them. But I first want to acknowledge for her that it's really painful and it's hurtful when you work hard and you're in these situations and then you're just being ignored. Like yeah. that's a lot of that's a big burden. And it actually hinders you from doing your best work ultimately because you're carrying Absolutely. That emotional burden. So,
and you don't yeah. often know like what it's a, like, you know, like is it because I'm the black person in this room? Like, I mean, it feels very viscerally like, okay, this people are not engaging with me in the way in which they're engaging with other people.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that makes me different from other people. Is this what this is about? Right. You know what I mean? And yep. then you have to do all the sort of like, you know, reckoning with that, or you know what I mean? And how do you feel about that? And like, you know, and there's obviously no way to just ask somebody like, yo.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that changes the dynamic completely.
So we all know like the sort of the drawbacks of her speaking up like forcefully, right? And then being like, oh, she's the angry black lady, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also no benefit from not speaking up either. You know, it's mm-hmm. sort of the rough situation she's in. Like she says that she feels like she can't be unapologetic and she can't speak up, but I mean, she almost has no choice, right? I mean,
right.
she could either suffer in silence or suffer like having spoken her truth, you know? I mean,
yeah. And you know, with all things being on the table, with all of those, with her trying all of those steps, if she's still feeling at the end that like it's about race, she needs to mm-hmm. document it. And she needs to mm-hmm. then, at a certain point, go to HR and make it be known. If it is something that is overt and blatant at a certain point.
I think you're right. I think, and you know, I mean, Tanya, you know this, like so many people of color leave organizations because of stuff like this. You know
yeah,
what I mean? Like,
yep.
I mean, I don't want to be like, listen, like, even if you end up moving the needle a little bit, like, this is going to be an uphill battle all the time. And maybe you need to find a different, you know, like a different place to ply your trade, you know, mm-hmm. and to show what you can do. But like, this happens in every industry, right? And it happens to people of color everywhere. It's like, listen, it's going to take too much effort just to move these things a little bit to do this. But, you know, we've all been there. Like, this is like when you hear when brown people get together and like, what is it like to work here? And they're asking the other brown people, they're like, are white people going to be tripping there? Like, is this the thing that I need to like be on guard for? Am I going to like, is it going to be some bullshit?
Yeah, this happens all the time. Has this, do you have a story? Has anything ever happened to you in your career that's far enough out that you could bring up?
Listen, I ain't trying to blow up no spots.
No spots here.
I'm trying to blow up no spots. But I mean, I'll say this, that like every newsroom I've ever been in has been overwhelmingly white. These are dynamics that are true in like in every newsroom, in almost every place in corporate America. But like, man, like the stuff that people have said that I can't repeat. And it's like, some of them are well-meaning white folks like we talked about. And some of them were like, this is the kind of thing that I can't even go report because no one will believe me. You know what I mean?
Ugh. You bring up a really good point, though, because like if we all, this is the sad truth. If we all took this on and went to HR about the things that have happened over the course of our careers, like this would probably change the trajectory of your careers because we'd be going to HR about things that then we'd be fighting this battle in a way that like changes your ability to be able to thrive in organizations. That's just like a fact.
Yep. Yeah. Like to be brown in a corporate space is to have to swallow a bunch of stuff, you know?
Yeah. The other thing with Woke at Work is that this, and I know how she feels, like she talks about being silenced. That has to carry over outside of life, like outside of work. When you get home, you're ranting, like we said, to your friends or your family. Like, what self-care tips would you give her? And what are some self-care things you do for yourself so that you can kind of survive and thrive?
I mean, this is hard for me. I'll admit this. But I think it's also, it's like, this is hard for a lot of people, not just Black folks or people of color. But like, work can take up so much of our lives, right? That like, it becomes maybe too central to our identity sometimes, you know? And so like, sometimes our sort of aggravations with work or sort of our, the things that frustrate us about work can like spill out into like all the other parts of our lives. And to the extent that any of us can sort of partition those things off, and I know that that's like easier in some jobs than it is in others, like, we should actively endeavor to, like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, and they actually actively be like, this is my weekend.
Yep.
What we're not doing this weekend is talking about work. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like what we're doing is all the other things that edify us. Yep. And, you know, whether that's watching The Office, a binge watching The Office, or old episodes of Living Single, or hanging out with your family, whatever. Like,
or reading gossip magazines. That's me.
Listen,
I'm
whatever
still
it
reading
is.
Reading magazines.
What magazines? Like physical magazines, glossy magazines. Really,
absolutely.
Really? That's what you're doing?
Yes, I love it. It's not the same when you're laying in bed and you're like got a tablet or something. You gotta have like right, the real magazine. But you run too, right?
Or oh my god.
Yeah. That is total therapy, right?
Oh. Man, it's the only time I like am guaranteed not to be on Twitter.
Because you can't run and be on Twitter.
Because you can't run and be on Twitter. I mean, you could. You might get hurt. But like, you know, I mean, I found it to be incredibly like important to my sanity. There's so many, especially if Woke at Work is like a young person like starting a career. There's so many people like who are just like young millennials and like who are like living in a sort of like slow rolling depression, you know what I mean? Because like just of the, because they can't around this stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, like, I honestly, like,
therapy.
Like I started seeing a therapist 2 months ago. That's been like incredibly, I cannot, I mean, it's really, it's
it life-changing?
Can be cost prohibitive. It has been like the, after the first session with my woman, with my therapist, Black woman, it was very helpful. Like it was like immediately, like I felt, it didn't fix anything, but it just like being able to externalize a bunch of stuff, like
with a non-partial person who like
someone who doesn't know
life.
Me, who's not doesn't you know what I mean? Like someone who's not a friend, who's not my family, who's not like they have no sort of they don't you know like
Like
I'm you know it's just like I just need to say these things out loud.
Yeah,
And they can be ridiculous, but I need to say them to someone who is not going to, you know, it's not like, you know, I mean, just, I just need to say them to somebody who doesn't know me and is not invested in me in this kind of way, you know, it's so important. The folks at Another Round, that podcast, when it was around, the dearly departed Another Round, they used to always talk about, you know, like go to therapy, take your medications, call your mom, you know what I mean? Like just drink your water. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's like very simple things, but like, Therapy is the hardest thing on that list, but it's like maybe the most sort of important, you know what I mean?
So I used to love when they say drink your water, because you know my mom would always say to me, have you drank water? Have you? She still says it today. Have you drank water today? Yeah.
I would say, like, it's hard to be like stand out there on faith and like say stuff, but you might need to, you know what I mean? You might need to advocate for yourself. As you said, you might have to actively intentionally find allies at work, not just allies like with the fist in the air way, but allies like in the sort of like we're collaborating on stuff way. Mm-hmm. So people are invested in you. And also like find a way to fill yourself up outside of work, you know, see a therapist, drink your water, and find a way to sort of like affirm and find like just a respite from the sort of like weird petty office dramas that always sound really life and death to us, you know, and they sometimes are like really, really important, but often like are exhausting as the friend of people who were complaining about like you have to like almost need to like a chart to figure out the office politics they're explaining to you. Like, let me tell you about this woman who did not CC me on this thing. And it's like, I know this is important, but I don't know who these people are.
I'm probably guilty of that too sometimes.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, so what? Who is this person here? Oh, that was you. Like, yeah. I mean, consider like, is this a space you want to be in? You know, is this the kind of professional space you want to continue to invest time in? But if it is a thing, whether or not you decide to stay there or not, look for like, find a therapist. You know what I mean? Like it might help you think through some of these big questions about like how you can be your most authentic self, even if it's not at work.
I think we're coming to that like collectively. I mean, as you said, it can be cost prohibitive for many people, but even then there are services that are available. Like it's becoming more and more of a mainstream thing with Black mm-hmm. communities in particular, and with all communities, that like mental health is an important part of our survival. And absolutely. Like taking care of your mental health, seeking out a therapist. I need to do it. Do you know, in producing this show, like everybody who's like awesome and brilliant has gone to therapy. And I'm okay. After we're done with this show, I'm like going to do some research. Yeah.
Get on that.
Yeah. Jean Denby, co-host of NPR's Code Switch. As always, it is a pleasure to talk with you. I know there's going to be some well-meaning white folks out there in their feelings about this episode. But you know what? In doing this show, I've realized just how much I've had to navigate around, silence myself, or be strategic in my dealings with well-meaning white folks who just don't get it. We live in a society that values their feelings over our well-being. Screw that. In the end, we've got to put ourselves and our well-being first. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Woke, you will be missed, but your memory will carry on in memes, SNL skits, and the internet. Because you know, it never forgets. Hey, this conversation isn't over yet. I want to hear your well-meaning stories and some of your solutions. Just add us at Truth Be Told Show on Twitter. It's a for real party over there, y'all. And speaking of parties, I'd love for you to join us in person for a live taping of our show. It's in Oakland, California on June 13th, and it's gonna be lit. For tickets, head to kqed.org/events. Can't wait to see you there. On our next episode of Truth Be Told, before we even know who we are and what we want out of life, women are expected to mother, to ultimately be mothers. And for women of color, there are these added pressures.
How are we going to do this? And who's going to pay for everything?
The pressure as a Latina from my extended family.
You couldn't be a mother if you were a slave.
As a woman of color, should I become a mother? That's next time on Truth Be Told. This podcast was produced by Christina Kim and edited by Sandia Dirks. Our sound engineer is Enrico Benjamin. Thanks to KQED's head of podcasts, Julie Kane, KQED's managing editor for news, Vinny Tong, executive editor of news, Ethan Lindsay, and chief content officer, Holly Kernan. A special thanks to Reverend Marvin K. White, who wrote that amazing woke eulogy for Truth Be Told. Truth Be Told is funded in part by a grant from the California Wellness Foundation, with a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. The foundation's vision is for every resident of California to enjoy good health and experience wellness.
And while you're listening on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, YouTube, or wherever you get your shows, please take a second to leave us a review and a rating. It helps other people find our show. Thank you. Truth Be Told is a production of KQED in San Francisco. I'm Tanya Mosley. When you hear the word woke, what comes to mind for you?
So it was a time, you know, back in the day when Erykah Badu was saying it, everybody was like, oh, it was just like a, you know,
stay
a sort
like,
of,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sort of joking, like, you know, I'm not, but like talking about this idea of like being aware and conscious or whatever, you know. And sometimes, you know, a little paranoid too, like, oh, stay woke, they put in fluoride in our water to make us whatever. Mm. But like then it became this thing that was kind of co-opted by white folks, as things tend to be. And then like it almost always sounds a little ironic, you know what I mean? Like yeah. It now feels very jokey. Like you see a lot of people on the right pointing to wokeness. It basically does this catch-all term for any sort of like anything they like link to like identity politics at all. It's like a bad thing, right?
Yep.
And so whenever I hear woke now, it's almost always in reference to white people now.
Me too.
White people who get it. To your point, well-meaning white folks.